Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our podcast. It might be evening or afternoon. Here it's afternoon. I'm here with Mr. Ryan Reed and
Kathy Murphy. Here I am. Good old thing.
Yeah, we haven't done a podcast for quite a while, so it's exciting to be back. Exciting to work with you again on the podcast.
Yes, it is good to be back here, Kathy. We actually have an audience there. Michelle's in the back. They're liking us all right there. It's nice that we can actually have a slight audience here. I feel like we're at professional radio. Like that one movie I watched this winter. But we have a great podcast here, which we're hoping to be in a series of podcasts here with our very own superintendent, Dr. PJ Capozzi here. And he's going to share us a little bit about his thoughts, building culture, and many, many more. And you can wrap us right into that.
Yeah. And he's given us some challenges and some ideas to think on and reflect on, and that's important for us as teachers. So it's going to be exciting. He's here now, so without further ado, let's go and hear what Mr. PJ has to say.
Yes.
Or I should say Dr. PJ.
you'll hear some doctor jokes throughout this PJ. We apologize. You put two doctors in the room together.
Anyways, here we go. Good morning, evening, or afternoon to everybody, whenever you're listening to this podcast. My name is Kathy Murphy. I'm here with Ryan Reed, Mr. PhD, and then also here with our superintendent, Mr. PJ Capozzi. Today, Mr. Capozzi is going to talk a little bit about the school culture and what's on his mind. So welcome, Mr. Capozzi, to this podcast.
I'm really glad to be back. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, thank you for having us today here, Dr. Capozzi. It's kind of funny. You know, he has the PhD. I have the EdD. We're both doctors, but he suffered more. Okay.
No, I'm EdD as well. I'm right there with you, brother. I'm EdD as well.
Did you guys say ADD?
No. Right. So I actually put two doctors in a classroom. Anyhow, PJ, you wanted to talk a little bit about school culture today, so why don't you let us know about that?
Sure. So my focus for second semester, and hopefully the focus as it's kind of coming to the buildings with the principals this year, has been on what is school culture, how do we know, and are we kind of consistently trying to form that? And so I think what I want to do today is kind of have a platform to talk about what I see the difference between culture and climate is, because I think we talk about those things interchangeably, and I think they're dramatically different. And so as a district or anyone that's outside of our district that's consuming this, I think it's really important to have that delineation first. And then once we get past that, then I can talk about where I'd like to see our culture go and how it manifests on a daily basis.
Good.
So let's start with climate versus culture. So the easiest way I can say it is like climate is temporary. So right now we are 2 days before spring break, and the climate of our buildings is let's get to spring break, right?
Like, yeah, I can identify with that.
Right. Like, so, and that mood in that exhaustion level, and in some cases that frustration level, that's all fleeting, right? Like that, that is how we feel in the moment. That isn't who we are.
No.
Right. So culture is quite literally who we are. It's akin to character in a human being. It's who we are when no one is watching. It's how we do business around here. So culture is quite literally like the combination and the amalgamation and the synthesis of the 10,000 micro decisions that happen within a school on a daily basis. It's how we behave. It's how we treat each other. And so climate is, again, it's the mood of the building. And so the way that I describe this is I try to take it away from school and talk about it in terms of things that we can relate to outside of these typical four walls. So I ask everyone to think of their relationship with their significant other. So some people have an amazing relationship with their significant other. Other people are struggling right now.
Yes.
So if you have an amazing relationship with your significant other, are there times where you still get into arguments? And so if somebody saw you in that moment, the climate of your relationship might be bad on those 2 days you have an argument. And conversely, you might be in a bad relationship, but you take a long weekend in Lake Geneva and everything's magical for those 3 days. Mm-hmm. That climate is up. But when you go back home and it's February and you've been around each other for 3 weeks and not out of the house, if that relationship is still strong and amazing, that's the culture of your relationship. That's what withstands. So climate is going to be variable in your relationships. Climate is going to be variable within any living organization, which is what a school is. culture is how we do business. Culture is again, the values through which we make our decisions. And so when I talk about culture, like for me, I want to see our culture that kind of perpetuates three things. One is this value of continuous growth. Like, are we unfinished? Do we believe that every day we can be 1% better than we were the day before? Do we believe that we haven't arrived yet? Do we believe that there is a chance for us that we are not the best teacher we've ever been today or ever are going to be? Or are we not the best superintendent that we are ever going to be today? And if that's the case, then we should be compelled to continue to try to get better. So that's the number one value. The number two value to me is like a pursuit of excellence. Are we willing to measure ourselves in some way? Are we willing to say that we see ourselves for greater than we currently are? Are we not setting ceilings on our performance? Are we willing to accept data as fact? Are we willing to look at something and really benchmark ourselves against it? Because if so, then we can continue to pursue better. And if we're willing to pursue better, that means that we are going to accept change. So both continuous growth and both the pursuit of excellence means that we are not accepting of the status quo. And then the last value that I talk about that I want us to drive in terms of our culture is integrity and equity. Mm. And so integrity is pretty well understood in terms of, like, you should keep your word and your word is your bond and be good to people and the golden rule and all of those things. But to me, there's a couple other layers of integrity that I like to discuss. The first one is the way that Brené Brown defines integrity. And she talks about integrity as having the ability to choose courage over comfort. And when you see something that's not right, speaking on it, when you're seeing something that doesn't align with your morals or your ethics, having the courage to be uncomfortable in the moment to address it, that's really what integrity is. And so that brings me to the equity piece. And so when I think about equity, to me, it's pretty simple. Every decision we make either perpetuates an equity gap or it closes an equity gap. And so if we can look at our life and our leadership and our teaching as to we're either closing gaps or perpetuating gaps, then I think it really helps guide our decision making. And so the reason I talk about those values is because if we actually have behaviors that match our values, then we can constantly be molding and shaping our culture. But when we are just behaving randomly, which sometimes happens as human beings, happens for me for sure, happens, but collectively as an organization, if our behavior is just haphazard, then our culture is quite literally like undefined and messy. And so the reason I am so focused on culture at this point is because if we have the strongest school or district culture in Illinois, we could drop any program, any initiative, anything in it, and we're going to be successful. If we have a broken culture and I bring in the best professional development and we drop the best initiative or the best program in here, it's going to fail. So culture is quite literally like the soil. If you have healthy, fertile soil and you plant a seed, most likely, not always, but most likely it's going to take. But if you have bad culture, it's like being in the desert. And no matter what seed you plant, it's not going to take. And so as I sat with the leadership team and sat with myself, and I think COVID has done a lot of things for a lot of people, but for me, it's helped me take inventory about where I am at as a human, where I am at as a leader, where I am at as a superintendent, but also where we are at. And anyone that's listened to me or follows me knows, and those obviously in the district for sure know this, is that we are in the midst of a referendum, and it's beyond stressful and difficult to get through, but it also helps you take inventory of things. And so as I think about where we were 7 to 8 years ago compared to where we are now and where I want us to be 7 to 8 years from now, none of that matters. None of that is possible if we don't keep focusing on the culture that we're building. And so for me, I've been very intentional over the last handful of months and will continue to be so. And I'm asking that my leaders continue to be so in focusing on the culture that we're building and hoping that it's built on the values of growth, on the value of pursuit of excellence, and on the value of integrity and equity. And so that's where my head is at right now. And that's where the majority of my focus is at in the moment.
Oh, thank you. I was just reading a couple months ago, Coaching with Equity by Julie Hans. And I've been at her seminar, but she always talked about exactly what you have to lay that foundation to build on it. And if you don't have a good foundation, it's going to crumble. And it doesn't matter how good the person is, how good maybe the program is, it's going to crumble without that building for that culture. So good points.
Well, I mean, equity, like anything else, if it's an initiative under itself and it's a silo, it's just going to fail, or it's going to be successful in the short term And when that individual leader moves on, or when it becomes a different, you know, initiative du jour, then everything's just going to fall apart. For things to stick in school, we know what matters. We know that it has to be embedded in everything we do. We know that we have to work to make sure that we value it beyond chasing a specific benchmark, or beyond it being a plan on a page, and beyond it being, again, the focus of an individual leader at an individual time. Because what happens far too often in schools is that we have these, like, almost like a boomerang effect, where we'll have an initial surge in performance based on attention, and then the attention goes away, and then the performance goes away. And so that's why we have these kind of yo-yo effects that happen quite a bit in schools. And that's why teachers get burnt out, is because you have well-intentioned teachers that are following the direction of their well-intentioned leaders that pursue something super hard for 6 months. And then it goes away forever. And then it's something else for 6 months. And then it's something else for 6 months. And even the best intentioned person after a while says, man, why am I going to go so hard at this if I know in 6 months they're just going to change it up on me again? We have a significant, and this is industry-wide, this isn't Meridian.
Right.
We have a very, very significant problem with focus in education. Mm-hmm. Because the issue is that it's all good work.
Right.
So I could take the work here at the high school compared to the elementary schools, compared to our neighboring schools, compared to schools in affluent suburbs. We might have 100 school improvement plans that all look different, and it all really good work. So there's always going to be work to be done. The question is, who has the courage to stay committed to the work long enough to actually have it mean something, so it actually impacts the culture of the building?
Well, I have a couple of questions, because I'm glad you came back to the courage over comfort. And this is a hats off, I think, to our English department and all the way down to the lower levels. Ryan and I were talking about this the other day, is that we have seen a massive change in our incoming freshman class over simply the simple thing of capitalizing the letter I. Our freshmen, it's very rare, I know in my classes, that I have to address that issue at all. So I see that as something that is a sense of continuous growth. So I commend our English department for that. I guess my question is, you know, there are extroverts and there are introverts. You know, you can look at all different personality types, but there's a lot of people that find courage difficult to do, difficult to speak out, difficult to say what's on their mind. There is always that underlying fear of, will I be fired if I say that? Will I get in trouble if I say that? And so I guess I just kind of wondering, for the people who lack that courage or hesitate, right? How can they work on improving that or getting braver? Or do you know what I'm asking?
Okay. Yeah. So for me, there's a couple of things that I would encourage people to be mindful of right away. Number one is kind of doing the risk benefit analysis, right? Like, so in your head, if I say something, this might happen, or this might be the benefit. Here's the percent chances of each. So I had an interesting conversation with a teacher that was upset with the decision about something I made. And it got back to me through back channels that they were upset. They didn't come to me. And so you guys know me. So what did I do?
You went to them.
I went to them. And I said, hey, I hear you got an issue. And the comment, they said, well, you know, I didn't want to speak out because I'm afraid of retribution. I said, I'm a lot of things, but I've been here 8 years. Have you seen me go after anyone? I'm like, well, no. I said, so there's 8 years of evidence to the contrary, but that's still going to prevent you from speaking your truth. Well, when you put it that way. So like, to me, that's just a case of the person hasn't done the ROI of figuring out, like, okay, what is the real risk of me doing this? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be uncomfortable in the moment? For sure. Did the person have a really valid point, and that's why I went to them? Yes. They had a perspective I had not considered. Mm-hmm. It would have benefited me to consider their perspective. So I wish they would have come to me, not because just for transparency and honesty, but they would have made me better by coming to me. So there would have been a direct benefit from sharing their concern.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. I mean, I have to say, and Kathy, and you've known me too, PJ, long enough, is I was in that environment where I was afraid of retribution. And many times, I'd actually trusted my boss or my supervisor, but there was always that fear due to several other ones too. And one time, I actually went in feeling, oh yeah, I don't have to worry about anything. I can speak my mind. And unfortunately, that was probably not the best decision to make at that time with that person. So it is very hard sometimes for people to do that. I mean, it's getting to know you. It's also that trust and, like you said, culture. But sometimes I think sometimes we are fearful because what if it's that one time, you know, we feel it's all good. This is going to be, whoops, this is the hill I'm dying on.
For sure. But I think there's a couple other elements of that. So for me, it's what is, if we are values based in the moment, right? Like, so what am I speaking out for? Is it because I'm personally a little disgruntled? Is it, or is it because something that I'm being asked to do runs counter to the values that I have, or runs counter to the values that the organization projects to have?
That's a good point.
And so if it's just because you're uncomfortable, or just because you don't like change, or just because it's the Thursday before spring break and dang it, I'm tired and I don't want to do it, right? Like, maybe that's a time not to engage, right?
Right.
Like, that the courage might be not engaging at that time. But if it's something that's not good for kids, or it's something that runs counter to what your morals and your ethics, or you don't believe is in tune with growth of the school or the organization or yourself, then I think the question always becomes, okay, who wins if I don't say anything? And so when that's the conversation I always have with myself, because as much as I am direct and I like engaging and I do, like, I sincerely like enjoy a good verbal banter, it's still uncomfortable. I still get butterflies before. Like, I'd love to tell you, like, every time I have a difficult conversation, I'm just rolling with the punches and it feels good, but it's not. And I'm the boss. So I know that a lot of times for other people, that's certainly not the case. But I ask myself always, it's like, who's going to win if I don't have this conversation? And the answer is always, the only person who wins when I don't have the conversation is me. It's a selfish decision. So if I truly believe something is running counter to the organizational values or my values, and I don't speak out on it, then what I did, I chose the easy way out. And so whenever I remind myself of that, then all of a sudden I can summon up the courage to go through and have whatever the conversation is. And are all those conversations easy? No. And am I amazing at all of them? No. But I also go back to when I have those conversations, one of the best verbal processes that I've learned, this is another Brené Brown, so this, I guess, turning into a Brené Brown podcast, but
it's always good stuff.
Right. Is that one of the things that she popularized is the story I'm telling myself. And so when I'm going to have a difficult conversation with someone and I say, when you did this, or you said that, or you whatever, the story I'm telling myself about that behavior is this. That's a much more disarming way of saying, hey, I thought it was really, you know, I thought we had talked about just giving out worksheets, or I thought we had just talked about playing movies for 2 days straight, or I thought, right? Like, so when I say, hey, the story I'm telling myself is that not only did you not listen to what I asked of you, but also I don't understand how this is best for kids. So therefore I need to ask you about it. Like, that's a much different way than calling someone in and calling them out their name, right? Like, it's a different way of going about it. So when I'm having those conversations, I just always imagine I'm having them with my favorite teacher, or I'm having them with my kid. And so if I treat every teacher the way I treat the very best teacher I've ever worked with, and I imagine them at better than they are, those conversations tend to go pretty okay. If you are talk down to somebody, or you're condescending, which I am at times. So this is not me saying I'm perfect. I'm just saying this is what I'm working toward not being, and I'm mindful of. Those conversations go typically okay, right? Like, if you're honest with someone and say, look, this is what I'm feeling. This is the story I'm telling myself. This is what I believe in, and this runs counter to it. And I think we need to have a conversation. That's hard to have. Like, that's hard to be mad about somebody approaching you that way.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up. Like, what story am I telling myself? I think what you're doing is challenging us as teachers for growth, because I think in this district, at least since I've been here, there's a lot of teachers who do fear retribution and do fear speaking out and saying what they think. And I don't think it's a reflection of this specific administration, but we have built a history, you know, and when you build a history, no matter if you were here, there, or elsewhere, you bring all that with you.
Absolutely.
So it seems to me that what you're challenging us to do is that we need to grow into a new mindset, where instead of growling and grumbling, that we need to really say, okay, where do I fall in this? How does this sit with me as far as my beliefs go, what I believe as a teacher? And then is it telling the right story for me and for our district? Or am I misunderstanding things? So I think what I'm hearing is that, I mean, I like what you're saying, but I do know for me personally, I will have a terrible time, you know, articulating. And Ryan knows I struggle with articulation sometimes. Yes. And I just don't know how to get what's in my brain out through my mouth, you know?
Right.
And a lot of times it comes out wrong. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean it to come out that way. So it's a challenge. I think what I'm hearing you say is I need to take inventory and challenge myself to maybe reflect a little bit on how to express myself better with a different story, with a different history, with a different story that helps me rewrite that history.
Absolutely. So to me, all of it tends to go back to, and I know like talking about values seems like I'm just doing like leadership speak, and I call people out for saying, doing that stuff all the time. So like, but I mean this sincerely, like if I know that I value those things like deeply in my soul. And when I see behavior counter to that, like I feel compelled to engage in those conversations. Like it almost just happens automatically now. Now, so the challenge that I would have for everyone before they start thinking about anything else is what values define you?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that might get into a whole different realm when we're talking about either morals, faith, et cetera. But I'm talking about like what defines you as a professional. And so for me, it happens to be the same, right? Like, so for at home, I value growth, excellence, and integrity the same way that I do at work. So it works for me, but what do you actually value? And then have we critically thought through, have we taken the time to painfully look in the mirror to see if our behavior actually aligns with what we value?
Mm-hmm.
Because when I say things like, do you believe that you are the best version that you will ever be today? Everybody reflexively says no. Like I will be better at teaching someday other than I was today. Like I have not arrived, I'm not perfect. Right? So like, if we can agree to that, but then when we initiate change and the first thing that we do is initially dig in, well, then we have to understand that our behavior is running counter to what we say we value,
mm-hmm.
which we all do. Every human being does. So that this is not me calling anyone out. This is not me being passive. Everybody does that. But we need to sit with ourselves. And what you said reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. Is I bring all of me everywhere I go. Right? Like, so like you get good, the bad, the baggage, the invisible backpack. You get
the
all
bad,
of me.
The ugly.
Yeah,
right?
I didn't mean to reveal that today, but oh well.
Right. Like you get a little bit of brilliance, you get a little bit of crazy, you get a little bit of like so you get all of me wherever I go. But when that comes, and when that happens for me, when the board says, why aren't we pushing harder here? And my initial reaction is to give them 75 justifications and rationale as to why I haven't pushed harder there. But then when I think about it and what they are saying is exactly what I believe in, it just hurts in the moment a little bit or stings, or I hadn't thought about it that way, or I haven't had to kind of go back to what you were saying before. I haven't had the time to process it in order to articulate why or to give the reason that might sound like an excuse to some people, but is a true reason. Like all those things are real and we are human beings and we get to go through those things. And so the question for me just always goes back, if we can talk about the things that we actually value, and again, our global values of a district that are stated are integrity, innovation, and excellence. And so the way that I internalize innovation is continuous growth, right? Like it's always that next step forward. Like those are hard to argue with, right? Like nobody's going to say like, I don't want excellence. Nobody's going to say like, I don't want to grow. And nobody's going to say, I don't want integrity. Right? Like, so those are big.
Yeah.
Right. Like those are big, broad things. So if you can bring decisions back and say, all right, when we look at this, is the fact that our students are achieving an XYZ percentile, is that okay? The answer is probably going to be always no, because we know that that isn't true excellence, even though like I am so darn proud of our district and I think we do an amazing job. We still haven't arrived. We're not done. We're not finished, which means we have to continue to grow. So then the question becomes, okay, what's next? How do we get better? Now, is that hard to think about? And is that like particularly hard to think about? Again, on the Thursday before spring break? Heck yeah. We just taught our butts off through a pandemic, changed 116 ways from Saturday. And now you're talking about how we're going to grow. And the answer is yeah. Like, because if I'm not, who is? Like, one of the things that I say around the leadership table all the time is like, our job isn't to make people comfortable. Our job is to make people comfortably uncomfortable. So they're psychologically safe. They feel free to fail, but they know that there's a next step. And if we think about how we treat our students, isn't that exactly what we do? We introduce content, curriculum, and skills that are to a level that push them beyond their comfort zone and expect them to demonstrate mastery in time with support. So teaching is leadership. Think about how we coach kids. Mm-hmm. Are our varsity coaches really worried if our kids are comfortable? No. They're comfortable if the kids are getting better.
Yes.
And so as leaders, which we all are in this district, from every student to every teacher to the people with titles, like, we have to be focused on what the next step is. So at some point, and I don't mean that to sound patronizing, and I think it sounds like I've said it enough that I think it sounds patronizing, so I mean this sincerely. That's not meant to sound patronizing. At some point, we have to realize that maybe this year is going to be the easiest year of the rest of our career. Because as you sit here, Kathy, how many years you got in now?
13.
What year has been easier? Has it ever gotten easier? Or is every year a little bit harder than the next?
Well, if be honest with you, if you're growing, every year you come in with, will this work?
Right.
You know, the changes that we make over the summer, we walk in thinking, well, is this going to be successful? Because we make those adjustments.
Yeah.
You know, we made them from last fall to this semester, and asking the question, are these working?
Right.
You know, and so we get kind of nervous at that because we don't know how the students are going to respond to different things that we ask them to do.
And I think it's a good point too, PJ, because you said it to yourself, like, is this working? And I had a project 2 years ago. I've been doing it constantly. And I said, this is working. We got this working. And then I got a class and it didn't work at all. In fact, they rejected it. And I had to go back to saying, what's a better way to do it? And then, you know, pandemic happened. I tried a little mixture of the two and it worked. And I did it this semester. And I think it was probably the best it has worked. It still isn't perfect, but at the same time is, you know what? I've learned in my career, because I've been doing this almost 11 years myself, is as soon as you think you're comfortable and this is going to work no matter what, guess what? That's when it's not going to work. And you really got to see, hey, so, but doesn't mean I have to constantly always be in that fear of, oh no, you know, what's going to go wrong with this lesson this year, this semester? It's just more of along the lines of, is it reaching it? Are the kids learning? But at the same time is this a lesson where I feel like I can build more onto it, or maybe cut away some stuff that's just not needed? Or am I just going to say, oh, this is comfortable, it'll always be work, and then you're going to get that next semester or that next school year, and you're going to get a reality check. It doesn't work.
For sure.
Yeah, what?
So the way that I always look at it is, even as we become more skilled, because you're better this year than you were last year, right? Like, hopefully, right? Like, I think you are.
I hope.
Right? So as we get better every year, the way I do this too much, and I make analogies and metaphors to fitness, because I think everyone has gone through a fitness phase in their life, so everyone can relate. But there's a time in your life where to jog a mile seems impossible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
Right. And then all of a sudden you work on it, right? You download an app like Couch to 5K or whatever. And like 3 weeks later, you're running a mile. And then you say, okay, now I'm going to not just run a mile. I'm going to run 3.2 miles or 3.1 miles and run the 5K.
Right.
And then that seems impossible. And then it's not impossible. And then you set the bar a little further and a little further. And we do that naturally for ourselves all the time. And so what tends to happen is that we go down that route, and then eventually we kind of slide back to whatever our normal habits are. Some people remain runners their whole life, or lifters, or whatever it is, and then other people slide back and, in another year we're going to have to go back. So the role that we have as leaders, and again, I think all of us in the district are leaders, is to constantly be pushing each other forward and establishing a culture that we're not allowing people to slide back. And we're constantly pushing them forward as to whatever their next step is. Some people, that's running that first mile. For some people, they're training for a marathon, and other people aren't interested in that, and they're figuring out how to lift weights, or they're figuring out whatever their own personal journey is. But for us as culture builders, we have to not allow ourselves to quit, to be comfortable. Like, at some point, like every day when I go into the gym to lift, like, I'm going quite literally to push my body to failure. That is what my intent is to do, is to fail. And then if I fail, I get stronger. And so are we pushing ourselves with the same level of intent in what we do instructionally? Are we doing it what we do culturally? Are we doing it with how we treat each other? And if we do that and we're constantly focused on getting better, then this is going to go from what is already a really, really cool place to be to.
Well, thanks, PJ, for being here. You've given us a lot to think on.
And I think that we've decided that we want to do these every couple of weeks or so. So we're setting kind of a timeline out for these podcasts for you. Any last ideas or concepts that you want us to walk away with?
No, I just appreciate the fact that you're going to give me time to rant at you and tolerate that. I would say if anyone wants to just start right now by just taking the time, whether it's in, so I do my best thinking in the shower, or I know people do a lot of good thinking when they're cutting the grass, so that'll be starting soon. Just when you're doing that, whatever allows you to be mindless and to actually get deep into your own critical thought, try to determine what your professional values are. And so to work through and to say, like, this is really what defines who I want to be, not necessarily who I am, but who I want to be as an educator. And then once we do that, then we can start comparing our behaviors compared to what we say we believe. And I think when we first do that work, that's super uncomfortable because we're going to find that some of our behaviors don't necessarily align, and that's going to force us into some decision-making. But I think the first step is really kind of really deeply looking into what do we value, what do we believe. And if you start to struggle with this, here's a decoder ring. Start thinking about what you talk to the people you love the most about. So whether it's your kids, your wife, your spouse, your parents, whatever it is, what you preach to them is most likely where your values lie. And that'll be a good decoder ring to get you started if you get stuck.
Great. Sounds great. Thank you so much, PJ.
Thanks for being here, awesome. PJ.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
You're welcome. And that's going to do it, guys. And we'll talk to you later on the Meridian Podcast.